Well, so you can imagine when Baha'u'llah said no, he will not go, that he was a prisoner in that house. Abdul Baha could not insist. He could not say any more. But then he decided he better get somebody who is not a believer. He could insist. And so he went along and he saw the Mufti of Akka, which is the religious head of the city. And he was one of those great admirers of Baha'u'llah, this Mufti. A man by the name of Miri, he was Ali Miri, he was a very devoted person, he was really devoted to Baha'u'llah. Wasn't only an admirer, but he really became a worshipper, you can say, of Baha'u'llah. He had seen so many miracles, really, that man, in his life, during that short period that Baha'u'llah was in Akka, that he once came to Abdul Baha and he said to Abdul Baha, he said, every time I stand to pray, Baha'u'llah appears in front of me. I pray to him. You see, this is how the influence of the power of God can change the hearts of people. And at first he was a great I wouldn't say enemy, but he was a very difficult person. He was very much against the faith and the founder of the faith. And he met Baha'u'llah in the barracks of Akka, this man. And he was so proud that Abdul Baha kept on reminding him when he went to the presence of Baha'u'llah that he must change his attitude. And if ever he wanted to say anything, if this man wanted to say anything in the presence of Baha'u'llah, Abdul Baha would say, be quiet, don't say anything. You know, this is how he really enabled him to see gradually the greatness and the power of the faith. And then came a time that this Mufti of Akka became such an admirer of Abdul Baha that if he ever walked with him, he always walked behind the master, which is a very important sign in the East. If you walk with somebody, it depends who you are and who he is. If he is more important than you, you never walk in front of him. You always stay a step behind. And he always walked behind the master. And anyhow, this man came to Baha'u'llah and he said that, why aren't you going to this house outside Akka? And Baha'u'llah said to him that he was a prisoner. He will not go. And he said, he insisted. And he said, everything is ready. You are not a prisoner. No one can keep you a prisoner. And remember, the edict of the Sultan was still in force. The edict of the Sultan was still in force. But and he said he will not leave Baha'u'llah. He just kept on. He clung to the hem of Baha'u'llah's garment and he knelt before him. And he said, not until he accepts this leaving the house will he leave him. And so Baha'u'llah said, okay. And then, as you know, he went to the mansion of Mazra'i for the first time. And he went in that carriage. And Abdul Baha says, I took him there and I returned back to Akka myself. And so Baha'u'llah then spent mostly the months of summer and the months of when the weather was not very cold, in the springtime, sometime in the autumn, he spent in that house. But he often came back to Akka. You mustn't think that when he went into that house that he never came back. Oh no, he came back many a time to Akka. And after all, Abdul Baha was living in the house of Abud. The mother of Abdul Baha was living there. The greatest holy leaf was living there at the time. And so he often came to the house of Abud. And then, as you know, this mansion of Bahji came into the picture. The mansion of Bahji was completed by the same man who owned the house, part of the house of Abud, a man called Udi Khammar. He built, he finished, he completely finished. It was half built building. Udi Khamar, he finished it and he made it a residence for himself. He wanted to move into this great palace in the outside, in the back. But as you know the details, how the outbreak of cholera took place and how Abdul Baha went along and rented that from him. And Baha'u'llah then moved into that. Now when he moved, he really did not move from the mansion of Mazra'a into the mansion of Bahji. It happened that he was in Akka. When he left for the mansion of Bahji, he left Akka from the house of Abud to the mansion of Bahji. And it was just at the time that my father was in the presence of Baha'u'llah at that time as a pilgrim. And he said that when this building was rented by Abdul Baha, the believers went there along with Abdul Baha and they washed the building with soap and water and everything else, because it is a marble building in the top part of it, you know, and they washed it all and cleaned it for the coming that Baha'u'llah will come into it. And the first people who moved in were the family of Baha'u'llah, but not the mother of Abdul Baha or the greatest holy leaf or Abdul Baha himself. They did not move, and the reasons for it, now we don't go into it. Then one day it was known that Baha'u'llah is going to move to that mansion. And as you know, Akka in those days did not have any public lighting. The whole area was in the dark at night, absolutely dark. But some Baha'is of India had sent to Baha'u'llah a very unusually large lamp, oil lamp, you know, oil, the wick, the oil. And this lamp was brought into the mansion and it was put in the hall, and it was, you could see it from distance, a light shining in the mansion. So now this is the background to it. So one day Baha'u'llah was to go and move to this mansion, and my father and Nabil, both of them, were living in a little room in one of the streets of Akka. The street of Akka, called the Suq-e Abyaz, means the white market. And when you live in that place, they had a window which was overlooking the road. And the only way that someone can come from the house of Abu to go into the, to go through the gate and go out of Akka is to pass in front of that house. And so they were standing behind the window, waiting just for a time that Baha'u'llah would be passing in front of their house, in front of their room. And they waited and waited until near sunset, before sunset. And then suddenly they saw that Baha'u'llah was then riding a donkey. It was very custom. This was the only way in those days. It was not the carriage, just the donkey. And behind was another, was Baha'u'llah's servant, about 10 yards behind him. He was riding on his donkey. And the two passed in front of this room. And as soon as it passed and they saw him, Nabil said, "Let us go and follow them." So the two of them came out and they walked behind about 200 yards away following Baha'u'llah. And when they reached the gates of the city, The guards showed their respects to Baha'u'llah, and he went out, and these two also went out afterwards. And soon it became dark, evidently, and then they could see, eventually they reached the point that they could see the light in the mansion. Ground for their cattle to eat. And one man went up one of these very tall trees, very, very tall. And when he went very, very tall up, went to the very top of it, suddenly he slipped a little bit and he fell down. Very high up, and he knew he's going to be killed. There's no question about it, falling from that height. At that moment, in desperation, in a fraction, in all this thing coming in a split second, he turned to God and he said, "If you save me, I'll give all my cattle to you. All that I have," and that's all he had, "all my cattle to you, for you. I don't want them. Please save me." And of course, God heard him, and he said, "Okay, we will see what he will test him." See, God always tests. He, instead of falling down on the ground, he fell on another branch. And he just hardly held himself. But it was, when he looked down, it was again dangerous. But it wasn't as dangerous as before. He was further down. So he again began to pray, "Please save me from here," he said. But he said, "You know, last time, when I was on the top of the tree, I said, I'll give all my cattle to you. I think it's not fair," he said, "that I should give all my cattle to you. Really and truly, I think half of the cattle for you. And after all, I have a wife and family and children. You don't, what will you do with all the cattle anyhow? I'll keep half of it, and the other, you save me. I'll keep the half, and then you keep the other half." So God said, "Okay, we'll let him go down a little bit more." So this time he fell down. And he came down and he landed on another branch, which wasn't at all as high as the previous one. But still, he saw now if he falls down, he's not going to be killed. That's the danger of death is gone. So he said, "You know, really, really, God, I was becoming very sentimental and carried away. I was really carried away. I think this is altogether an unfair situation. I mean, what will you do with me? I have a wife, I have children, I've lived all these years, I've gathered these cattle, and now give you half of it. Really, what will you do with the half? Really, that's unfair. I was carried away," he said, "when I was up there. I'll make a deal with you," he said. "I'll have all the cattle, and you have all the milk and the cream." So God said, "Okay, that's all right. Fair enough." And he let him drop down to the ground. And when he dropped down to the ground, he said to himself, "What milk? What butter? Oh no, you don't want it. Really, this was all unusual excitement on my part. You don't need it." Now you see, I said the story that now at this time in the history of mankind, we are now on the ground. Our foot is on the ground and we are safe. But a time will come, I can assure you, that we will be on the top. And then we are ready to give everything. And then it may not be just work out for us. This is what happened in Persia. Because the world conditions will really dramatically change. We talked, the world conditions will deteriorate with such speed now that it is going to bring about what Baha'u'llah has foreshadowed, the limbs of mankind to quake. Choghi Effendi mentions, he says, the cities will burn, the atmosphere of the earth will be contaminated. And he said these are only either accompanying or will herald the coming of that great calamity which mankind must go through. He has written this. So that it is our really work and our privilege now to arise and serve the cause of God and be sure of his assistance. He'll come to us if our motive is right. Well, I feel that you've had plenty of you got tired, and we can go out, Mr. Chairman, huh? Have a cup of tea and then we can come back again. But this time I will certainly deal with all the questions that you have written. I have them all in here. Well, I am going to look at something which is... I suddenly thought of a little story, I tell you, because it's a good thing to know how this is to do with this, because somebody was mentioning to me during the break that gave me to... I felt that people think that to serve the faith, it means that you have to do something very, very big. All the big noises, join the big noise people like myself, for instance, which is not really serving the faith at all in relation to what other people can do. I can tell you that. Talking is nothing to do with the faith, with serving the faith. It could do something, but I feel that we are, we must not think that to serve the faith you have to be responsible for a certain function, or you must be a person who is a member of an assembly or a national assembly or a board member or anything like that. This has nothing to do with service to the faith. And another thing that I want to mention is that how much in the next life we will be amazed to find out that so many unknown people in this life, unknown in the way of public, not being in the public attention or in public eye, who will have such an exalted station in the spiritual worlds of God, and how many people like me who will be completely lost. Now, you know, this is true. This is really true. We must not ever attach importance to this, the people having a position, because nobody, as I said, has a station in this faith, really. We are all having a function. Yes, we have sacred functions. But this function is given, and God help the person who has been given a function. If he doesn't do his function well, it's much better if he was not given this function. You know? Because service to the cause is when you make a cup of tea in your home with the love in your heart that you want the people to come into your home, so that they could hear about the faith. That service, if it is done with the purity of motive, which is you do it for the love of God and for the love of Baha'u'llah and for the love of the people, that's much more meritorious than anything else, because God does not want from us more than we can do. But he wants us to do our best. It doesn't matter what we do. And in fact, the simpler one is, the better it is, that the simple heart, the simple person. We have lost, I think, our simplicity in this modern civilization. If a soul is simple, God loves that simple soul. Always the simple soul has got the... He is the one who is going to benefit, and he'll receive all the rewards, because there's nothing worse than becoming sophisticated with modern way of life. And this modern way of life has really destroyed most peoples of the world, have been destroyed as a result of this modern civilization, which is eventually going to be destroyed and perished, this civilization that we have. It's a tottering civilization that Shoghi Effendi refers to it. So that, you know, we must not pay attention to these outward appearances of peoples and what they do. What is important to God is the heart of person and how you feel. And what little you think, what little you do, which is the best you can do, is much more meritorious in his sight than all